I'm here on a job site with Tim, who owns his own electrical contracting business.
3 employees and 2 work trucks.
Tim traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance. We're positively here where he needs us most.
They sure are.
With step-by-step help on all his insurance needs, all for shockingly low rates.
Shockingly low, huh?
Just a little bit of electrician humour. Do you get it?
I got it.
You know, it feels like we have a real connection. All right, I'll stop.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
Oh, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
The Market Musings Podcast with Fairbairn and Russell.
Welcome to the Market Musings podcast, where we are welcoming back a guest we've had on a few times before. Everyone loves him, Darren Hazlewood. How are you, Darren?
I'm very well, Mark. Thanks for having me on. Kenny, how are you?
Yep, all good, all good. What was the weather check? What's the weather doing down in England? Is it nice and sunny?
The sun has been shining for days, and to be towards the end of April and the lack of rain over the last 2 months has been quite extraordinary, actually. I don't know when it's next due to rain, but it's been a lovely spring so far.
Yeah, I must admit, it's been reasonable here. There's still a chill in the air, so there is. But we're getting there. Hopefully, the next couple of weeks, we can get up into double figures in Scotland. No, it's not been bad today. I think it's been like 13 or 14. So it's still shorts and T-shirt weather, norm. Quite happy with that.
I was going to say, that's kind of tropical. Summer highs, isn't it?
And yeah.
Up there in the glens of deepest, darkest Scotland.
Well, to put it in perspective, so I went fishing last weekend to the River Aw, and which is about an hour and a half from me. And it was a lovely day on the Friday, so I got up on the Saturday morning, it was about 3 degrees, and I thought, that's quite good. It was like 4:30, 5 in the morning, and by the time I went over the hills, it was -5, and it was absolute Baltic by the time we started fishing. And the week before, I was away fishing as well, and I was casting my line, and it was really cold again, and I'm saying, this fly line's not good out. And I've got a big 13, 14-foot salmon rod. I said, I'm not getting this line out far at all. And I actually looked at the top 4 or 5 eyes to my rod, and they were frozen, and the line was struggling to go through them. It was that cold. It was absolute Baltic. So, yeah, there's still a bit of chill in the air here, but we're getting there. Mm-hmm. But I never caught nothing. So, there we go. That. Yeah, but it was good to get away from, get away from the markets. The phone was still going, but it was nice just to get a bit of fishing and just be away from the screen and try and do some normal things now that the world's opened up again and we're allowed to travel a wee bit.
Yeah, it's not always an easy thing to do to keep some normality due to just the very nature of the markets and how we operate. You know, it's not a standard life choice. But for me, I actually love that. There's always something going on.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, obviously, I've dipped my toe in the crypto space as well. So it's 24/7, 365 days a year. So, you know, there's pretty much something going on all the time. But no, it was good. It was good to get away, and everybody needs to get away. So they do. Even CEOs of gold exploration companies, you need to get away and recharge your batteries so that just you become less and less efficient. So, yeah, it'll be good to get away for a weekend with a log cabin or something as well when we're allowed to. But it's all coming back. It's all coming back, which is good.
Yeah.
There we go, Dan. So you've been pretty quiet of late. I mean, you were quite vocal last year, but obviously you've been busy doing bits and pieces in the background, namely putting together probably a package to list this Australian company. Tell us a bit about that. How did that come about, Dan?
Well, just on being a little bit quiet, that's a very conscious decision. There is a huge amount more work that goes on in the background than people would ever really contemplate in looking to move the Australian assets into its own vehicle. And you have to go through a process. And I just felt that if I was talking to the market and talking to investors, it would just simply be the wrong thing to do, because I wouldn't be able to give any guidance around what we're planning and why we're looking to do it, and the potential upside and the benefits to the company and to shareholders. So that would be wrong to talk in terms that really you wouldn't be telling lies, but you wouldn't be painting a true picture. And I personally would be very uncomfortable about that. And we've managed to basically get everything lined up now. And that's what allowed us and what triggered the announcement of our plans. You're obviously limited on what information you can give out at this stage. And that's largely due to not having everything cemented in place, because there are discussions and negotiations with brokers and others to get to a final number that Panther Metals PLC will end up holding. Mm-hmm. And that, so yeah, obviously that's a thing that everybody's kind of out there looking for an answer. And my easy answer to that is simply, it will be a material position that, should they have the success that we certainly feel those assets could generate, it would have a material impact on Panther Metals PLC. And that's what I'm looking to achieve. Across Australia and Canada, we've got numerous assets, and we could work one or two in quite some detail, but I want to get onto all of them. And over time, people will see the benefits to this type of structure, but it will take time, and you've got to have a little bit of patience in this type of scenario. You've also got to have a bit of confidence that we do absolutely know what we're doing. There's a huge amount of experience around deals and shaping deals and the markets and the corporate market, and to allow us the freedom to get on with that. Just look at people's histories and what they've achieved. And also, sometimes it can be not just what they've achieved. It's you get a lot of lessons over the years in structuring deals in any business. Mm-hmm. And we benefit from that hugely in this sector through the people that we've got on the board. So, all of us have some level of input. It's certainly not a dictatorship. It's quite the opposite, actually. And I'm looking forward to the future with it.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, when you guys get into Australia, you picked up the stuff in the Northern Territory first, Annaberu and Marakai. Was it always the intention to do this? Was this the game plan from the beginning, or did the assets, Merrolia, just simply facilitate that and the plan came about once these assets were in place?
No, it's come about due to how much we like the assets, which there is obviously an irony there. We really like Merrolia. We've also got to complement Marolia, we have to bring in the Blue Brock and Bonanza ground, which is the option agreement. Yeah. To bring that in would be a dilutive event for Panther Metals PLC. That's now going to be a dilutive event for the subco in Australia that's going to list. So that complements Marolia. And then Anabaru, when we've discovered, you've effectively, Anabaru is 150 square kilometres. And we took Anabaru for Anabaru Dome, which is really in the top western portion of Anabaru. Now, the desktop study and the fieldwork we've done has shown that there's actually four sizable exploration targets up at Anabaru. And so you've got to divide that asset into four, in effect. You're not looking at just one asset. And once you put everything in the mix and you look at the business, where the business is at, and what we can do, then you look at it and you have to make a decision. Do you do some work across all the assets? Do you do a lot of work on one of the assets and park the others for later on down the line? There's risks involved in both of those, i.e. that you never get to the stage where you've got serious numbers that will please the market. If you go with the spreading yourself across all the assets, if you go for hitting one asset, if that asset doesn't actually produce what you hope it will, then the market will mark you down accordingly. Mm-hmm. And that's not without reason, you know, that's the name of the game. So if you happen to go on to what you could effectively say the wrong asset, and you focus all your attention on that, you don't know that at that moment, you get marked down. But you've still got, in our case, including Maracay, you've still got four other assets that have, you know, huge potential. So then the other route is the route that we're taking, which will allow us to do some serious work in Canada, the Big Bear and Dotted Lake. We'll have a material position still in the Australian assets, but at the PLC level, we'll face absolutely no dilution. We can bring in the option agreement, and the guys will be cashed up to really get on and work the assets, and the success they have will then be reflected in Panther Metals PLC. Yeah. So it's not an easy choice, but it's absolutely the right one.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I mean, you brought a few guys on the board of the private company a few months ago. I'm just trying to remember their names. Their names have escaped me.
Dan and Ranko. Dan is very well known in Western Australia. There are not many mines in WA that Dan hasn't worked. He's a mining engineer, runs a consultancy. That there are not many that he hasn't worked on. And there's not many people he doesn't know. Exceptionally well-connected guy. And Ranko is more on the corporate side. But again, a very, very good guy, very well-connected. He does sit on the board of another company. And then of course, Karim speaks for himself. Mm-hmm. So that's another point that people have got to understand. It's very easy to look at these things and have an opinion, but I tell you, from the inside out, being able to put together a very, very competent board that has the ability to totally understand what they're doing and drive assets forward is not an easy thing in this industry. And that's exactly what we've managed to achieve as well. And that should give everybody, you know, real added confidence.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and it looks like all the ducks are lined up. So really with Australia now, you're just doing the corporate side of things, which sometimes can be frustrating because it takes longer than you probably want. But
No, Kenny, not at all. There's a lot of work going on out there.
Oh no! I'm just talking about from the actual, you know, the listing side of things. You know, you can't rush it. You can't take shortcuts. You've just got to follow the process, and get it over the line. But it'll be interesting to see how it all pans out. And obviously, Kerem, he loves the Northern Territory assets anyway, because I think he spent some of his time over there, didn't he, when he was at uni. From memory.
Yeah, he's done his PhD in the Northern Territory. Mm-hmm. He's got a world class understanding of it, and he always has a glint in his eye when we discuss Annaberu, mm-hmm. So people have asked, well, I prefer Australian assets to the Canadian assets, mm-hmm. And that's just natural, and I get that. But you also got people that prefer the Canadian assets to the Australian assets. But we're not giving away anything here, because the level of funding that they're going to get and bringing in the option agreement, that would have been a very dilutive event on Panther Metals PLC. Mm. And that's not going to happen now. So...
Well. You see, I was going to ask you, Darren, just on that point. Yeah, do you feel sad that you're not going to be sort of the operator? Obviously, but you retain a percentage of the new vehicle. But yeah, I mean, do you? I remember you were quite excited when you got these assets. So, I mean, are you a little bit sad to let them go in a little way? No.
Quite the opposite. It's okay. Business smart. Yes, do I think that it's the right business decision for the company as shareholders, and will it give us the platform to move forward and develop and underpin the business? Absolutely, I do. So I couldn't be happier if you want the truth. I tell you what you guys should do, and listeners, they should. Couple of books that if you read them you would start to understand my thought processes and how I think, maybe, and one does complement the other, even though it's outside of the industry. So, but have a read of Never Rest on Your Oars by Dr. Norman B. Keevil from Tech. It tells the story how Tech developed and what they did and the minds they brought on and how things all come together. But we're talking about from the 50s onwards. Obviously, Tech today are valued at a 12 billion market cap. But they started off with a very small, dedicated group of guys and build it from there. But they then built their technical teams as and when they were required. And that's how you build a company. You know, we've got an amazing, amazing board. And unfortunately, nobody gets to see behind the scenes. But another book that to sort of link in, it is called The Outsiders, Eight Unconventional CEOs and Their Radically Rational Blueprint for Success by William N. Thorndike. Now, that's a book that I go back to time and time again. And effectively, it's two things. It's how CEOs have run businesses efficiently. And the other point being is making the right calls on how to deploy cash and critically when. And we all know that one of my topics is always I don't raise enough capital. Absolute rubbish. What I do is raise capital when we require it. And if the right thing comes along, it doesn't scare me in the slightest what we do. If it's the right decision for the business, it underpins the business and it gives us a platform to move to the next level. And those are all decisions that I'll make as and when. And I'm pragmatic, losing the Australian assets. I'm not losing them. I'm gaining a foundation that will underpin Panther Metals PLC and allow us to go to the next level should the Australian assets prove successful. But don't forget also, these guys are so well connected. It doesn't mean that the company you see today and the assets that are in the company will necessarily be the same ones in a year or two. There's nothing going on there, but these guys are well connected, and I'm very confident what we're doing and where it's going and why we're doing it.
All right, excellent. Well, you touched on a good point there, Dan. There you're talking about raising money, etc. Obviously, that this week there was a was it 200,000 you raised from as a non-broker. Two guys or high net worth investors approached you. Is that what happened?
Yeah. I did laugh to myself this week. There was obviously, as a CEO, people send you stuff, and there was somebody questioning the validity of that, and is an inside job, I think, and all that kind of rhetoric that people would be sadly disappointed how something like this came about. And it was literally a phone call very early one morning, seeing if I would have any interest, and I said, well, we basically discussed terms, I wrongly suspected that the people potentially want warrants. That was dismissed almost instantly, and then we talked about a price, and we settled on a price that I felt was fair for the new investors, and one that I felt was fair for the company and fair for existing shareholders. And so I took that money. I know what we could do with that money. I wouldn't have taken if it was just to sit there to make the bank account look happy. But that'll all come out as we develop.
Yeah, yeah. So obviously now Australia, although it's not put to one side, you're still working on it. But I mean, from an exploration point of view, from Panther, the focus will shift to Canada. I take it in the next 4 or 5 months.
Yeah, it's never really shifted away, in fairness. But no, absolutely right. But Australia now is completely self-funding. Mm-hmm. That they will do a seed funding round, and they've certainly got plans to move things on already, as you'd hope and expect, to be fair. And yeah, the focus will move to Canada, but what you've also got, what everyone's got to appreciate, is that by doing what we're doing with the Australian assets, it actually frees us up to potentially, look at other things. This has been mentioned quite often by us, and our view on orogenic gold deposits in greenstone belts. And that's something that we are very, very keen to push forward on. And in reality, is exploit our knowledge and experience within the company. And people that have listened to the different interviews I've done in the past will understand why we've got that. Well, we genuinely have a knowledge and an understanding that is unsurpassed probably in the world, or certainly on an academic level anyways. And I want to convert that into commercial reality. And even if we were to look at one or two other things within that area, and there'll be good reasons why we look at those, we start to look a little bit spread out, a little bit thin. So whilst we haven't got any particular project or area directly in mind at to as of today, you've got to do these things in stages.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to make sure that you can position the business in the correct manner that you can work assets that you bring on. And in our case, that means listing off the Australian assets on the ASX. And it frees us up a little bit more to continue to work on and develop and possibly exploit the knowledge and understanding we've got. So it becomes a win-win. And that's what this isn't some a concept. Panther isn't an idea that's just been plucked out the air. People understand and know my feelings on precious metals, the precious metal market, the world economies, the impact that that's potentially going to have on precious metals and why that's going to impact. I think we're starting to see indications of inflation starting to pick up, which has been something I've discussed at length, that we're not seeing the end to helicopter money at this stage. We've seen, there was a Bloomberg report only yesterday that the commercial property market in the UK is in some serious trouble with defaults, etc. I will tweet that tweet if I can find it, actually, just to confirm that. And the stresses are starting to show, and I think that's been reflected in gold, because gold kind of is a bit ironic that gold has dropped out of favour when it's at a price above $1,700. Mm. If you'd said that 3 years ago, people would have laughed at you. And how can it over $1,700 be out of favour? Yes, it may have cooled from its highs, but and it seems to be making a move back towards them. But there is a lot to play out across the world and global economies, and how they're going to stop, how governments are going to stop taking on debt to shore things up. I don't know. Tell me somebody that does know the answer, because the realities are that the only tool left in their box is inflation. Let inflation run without increasing interest rates. Mm. Now that is a really dangerous game. Without having the handbrake of interest rates, and they haven't got the handbrake of interest rates. In the UK itself, you know, there are people out there with £250,000 mortgages at 1.852%, and that's what they've become used to over the last 10 years. That's not normal. And if they were to suddenly go interest rates to go up to 4 or 5%, you'd be turning the lights off basically in the country, and the governments know that. So how, once inflation starts, how you then stop that, I don't know. But they're throwing their last dice, and you can't blame them. It's the only game in town left them to do.
Yeah.
And I have a lot of sympathy, but then we're as much to blame as anyone, because effectively the Western world's lived way beyond its means in the last 30 or 40 years. Time is coming where it's going to come home to roost, I'm afraid, in my opinion.
Well, talking of dice, is Panther just going to continue to throw the golden dice, or is there going to be some other commodities on that dice? Or is it a six-sided gold dice?
that'll do me, Kenny. Look, our primary focus is always going to be on gold.
Mm-hmm.
But what people need to remember is that with gold comes other commodities.
Yeah.
It's not a unique commodity. Look at Olympic Dam in Australia. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just about every commodity, actually. It's known as a gold mine. It's not a gold mine. Well, in fact, is it known as a gold mine or a copper mine? Because it seems to be of equal importance. Look at Minto in Pembridge have got a stake in up in the Yukon. That's a copper mine, but actually it's a copper gold mine. The gold credits on Minto are vast.
Yeah.
And so the primary focus will be gold, always will be. However, the truth is, and any CEO in the world may say this, may not, but it's the truth. I will take any commodity that is available in commercial quantities that makes a difference to this company. But yeah, with that caveat that gold is the primary focus. If I happen to stumble across a huge nickel deposit, I'm not about to turn around and go, well, it's not gold, not interested. Yeah, like, that's poppy. That's rubbish.
You do have a nice mix in the Canadian assets as well. I mean, I've obviously studied the MLAS database quite a bit, done a bit of research, and there is showings across various of your properties for zinc and copper, lead, just to name a few. So, like you say, gold is your primary focus, but there will be other stuff in the mix, which it's always nice as well, because it adds to the story as well. So it does. It makes it, there's some people that might only invest in gold, but there might be people that, well, actually, they've got a nice copper project there as well, so that floats my boat, so I'm going to invest. So it widens your horizons for investors, shall we say.
Yeah, Dotted Lake is a perfect example of this. We've got some really good gold showings at surface that they're historic numbers that we've managed to replicate. So we're going to drill through that shear zone. We know it's gold hosted. How much gold? We don't know. The general consensus is that we think it will be between 150 and 200 meters thick. Once we're through that, we should hit a gabbro rock, and who knows what's potentially in that. But if you look to our east and west and on this major fold that the property sits on, you've got Palladium One, they've got their discovery, and that they're drilling again, they've recently announced, and you've got Generation Mining, and that's all copper, platinum, palladium. So who knows, but we're drilling primarily a 400 meter hole is to actually start to build a picture on what's going on underground. And that's going to help drive our work programs and how we look at moving that property forward. We're quietly excited about Dotted because of what's gone on, as I say, to our east and west in that system. But then even to the south of us, we've got Hemlo Explorers. They're drilling 10,000 metres, less than a kilometre from some of our border on the southern edge. And one decent hole somewhere around it is going to send things send things into orbit in reality. We know that. And that'd be a spectacular hole, to be honest. But so what we're doing there, we're just doing that one hole because it's about knowledge. And in this area, even though Hemlo area is so well known, people would not believe the lack of work that's gone on in that area. People took the properties on, but nobody worked them. Nobody did any serious work. Even Naranda drilled three holes around in and around Dotted Lake, but they went to just over 100 metres a hole. That's not deep enough in that area. We know that. Hemlo Mine has proved that. What is it, the 76 drill hole they did there? That Hemlo would not be discovered today. I don't believe that anybody would have kept going with the drill holes all the way through. But those guys believed in it and believed in what they're seeing there. And we believe in what we're seeing. We love our mag data. And we're very happy bunnies.
Yeah. And obviously, I mean, the area around about Dotted Lake as well is, I mean, when you guys went in there, I'm not saying you were isolated, but there wasn't really anyone round about you. But now you've got every man and their dog in there, from listed companies like Power Metals to there's quite a few private companies in the area as well now that have taken up
residency.
Yeah, I know. That's without alcohol. That's what's wrong with me.
Kenny, I knew this sounded different tonight.
Yeah.
You need to have a pack of beers before you come on.
Well, I'm still on this weight loss journey, Darren, so I'm trying not to drink at all, which is proven difficult in this line of work. But no, you've got some new neighbours, both private and listed entities, and it's, you know, they're pretty active, some of these private companies and social media as well, I think. I mean, I can name them. It's First Class Metals and Fulcrum Metals, and they're producing some lovely maps. And Panther Metals is sitting right in the middle of these maps, so it must be in a good position to be in. You've got companies round about you that are new to the game. You've got companies that are established and drilling. So I know you guys are going to be drilling yourself once you get your permitting sorted out, etc. But it must be great if, you know, somebody round about hit, as you said, a decent hole, and it's just a game changer for yourselves and obviously anyone else in that zone.
And make no mistake, I'm in contact with just about everybody in that area as well. Mm-hmm. And I'm not precious, and I don't believe in an insular attitude. If anybody has any success, it helps everyone. So we should, it's important that you stay in contact and. You've got open lines of communication around and about, and help each other out if you can.
Yeah, and share the exploration costs and things like that. I mean, there's no point in you getting a helicopter up there for 3 days, and then the following week, the company next door to you gets a helicopter up there for 3 days. You know, let's pick up the phone and then sort out a deal between us where we both get it cheaper. You know, there's cost savings to be made with friendlies, for want of a better term, roundabout.
Hey, listen, everyone's friendly until they prove otherwise.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. But the Hemlo Schreiber area is, or I keep calling it Schreiber. I think it's, I don't know how they pronounce it, but you'll know best, Dan. How do they pronounce that in Canada?
Schreiber.
Yeah, well, you say it the same as me. I've heard about four different versions of it. So,
Who knows? Well, listen, when I was there, I've been there, I stayed there, and I wasn't corrected out there. So, you know, I'll stay with that until told otherwise.
Yeah. Mark, you're very quiet. I hope you're not getting tucked into some booze or something there.
Well, you're in Holland, aren't you, Mark? So is it booze in Holland, or is there other things on a Friday night that?
I am. there are other things, that's perfectly legal here, but you know, I can't comment as to whether I have one of those other substances available to me at my disposal. But I am pleasantly listening here quietly because Kenny knows an awful lot more about what's going on in sort of Australia and Canada.
I'm not putting the time on it
over the years, but it's nice to get an update of what's going on. When do you expect the?
I'm becoming very old.
You're not putting a time on it, Darren.
Very quickly on this, on timelines. No. As soon as you put a timeline on it, people will quite rightly then put that date stamp on your forehead. And all I can say is, we're looking at listing this as soon as is feasible. But I can give you an apt, perfect example. We needed to, as part of the process to announce what our plans are, we needed to open a bank account somewhere. And that's not an easy process in this day and age. And that actually caused us quite a bit of delay in announcing this, because we didn't have the bank account that we needed in a certain jurisdiction in a certain place. And for no other reason than simply the processes you have to go through now to get a business bank account. And if I'd have discussed this in January, I would have certainly have put an earlier date by a long way than when we announced. But just getting a simple, what used to be a very simple thing in place just takes a little bit longer. So I could give I have a rough indication, when would be ideal, but I'm not going to say that because rightly people hold you to it. But nothing's going to stop in Australia though. Don't think for one second anything is going to stop. But that's the whole idea of getting seed funding in, so that the guys can keep advancing the projects, and we can now focus on Canada and push forward on those.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Because, I mean, you have been, as Kenny said at the start, you have been quite quiet for a little while, but now you're sort of opening up the floodgates, so to speak. So I'm thinking what activities
Australia,
are going on?
We've got the orbital drilling program where we are awaiting results of those. They're expected shortly. You've also got mag flights that are due, and those results. You will then see the auger drilling campaign. We also, you will then, obviously that will trigger a follow-up work program on those, based on those results. But you've got to remember that in Marolia at Southern Tip, there's a non-jork resource of, I think it, about 2004 it was announced, 7.5 million tons nickel at 0.8%, and it's very much a feeling internally that's worked on considerably more, and on the northern tip as well there's nickel. So, and in between you've got the Comet World trend that we believe has is highly, highly prospective for gold mineralization. So it's interesting, and that work will continue. Over in Canada, we are due to drill at Dotted Lake. We announced that. We didn't get there over winter. There is very good reasons for that, actually. But look, I'm not going to bore people with those. It was more logistics than anything else, but that's all done now and sorted. But we're just waiting for things to just get that little bit warmer and less wet. Because what happens is snow melt makes everywhere quite boggy. So it's very, very close. Let's put it like that. But I will give more guidance on exact, very soon. And Big Bear, we await permits for Big Bear. We have been in constant communication with the Ontario Mining Authorities. And I've said this before, but I will say this with a bit more confidence that we do expect to be able to announce quite a detailed program at Big Bear in reasonably near term.
Good. Okay. Good. Now it's nice to hear that things will be picking up again, and we can see how things develop. Just nice to get that milestone over the line.
And just double checks. I know you love Marolia.
With regards to Australia, Mark, and then you can sort of move on.
We haven't upset you, have we?
To keep following what's going on.
See, I call it Merrill Lear. I don't know why. It just.
No, I'm okay. I'll manage. I'll be fine. Yeah, I'll be fine, Darren. Yeah. Marolia. No, I'd say Marolia. As Darren's, yeah. No, I just think it's a cool area, as I've discussed before. It's just that I didn't know it was such a cool area. We were speaking to a chap from Nova Minerals called the CEO, Christopher Gattison, who have a project over in Alaska. Yeah. But he did a large number of years in that area in Kalgoorlie. Yeah, Kalgoorlie in Western Australia, and it's just like an awesome place. If you want to get into mining geology, just It's just like an awesome place. It looks like another world. And yeah, I suppose I was hoping one day to have a trip out to Australia and land on one of the airstrips there and go and visit some of the projects. But I suppose, in a sense, I could do that.
What we're actually doing is providing funds to be able to work.
So no, it's not going anywhere, is it, Darren? As you say, it's.
I'm glad, Mark. I didn't want to.
I can sleep soundly. Yeah, but I feel a lot of love for Canada. You can sleep soundly. But I also feel a lot of affection for Canada as well, Darren, and the way you talk about that. So,
I'm just listening to you. We're all good here.
I did wonder if Mark needed a group hug, Kenny regarding Maroli, to be honest.
I've not had a group hug for a long time, Darren. You know, it's Groundhog Day over here for me. I see the same walls, I see the same one other person. You know, I love her very much, but, you know, I see the same other person every day. And sometimes I need a group hug, sometimes I need a bear hug. And who do I go to for a bear hug? None other than Kenny, because, you know, he looks very cuddly. I've never actually had one from him, but every time I go for a bear hug, he tells me to F off. So, you know, I could do with one. I'll be honest, Darren, I could do with one.
I'm not quite sure where this conversation's going.
it just maybe looks at me as a fatherly figure. I can't talk tonight. I'm really losing it. A fatherly figure.
He needs to get back on the beers, can he?
That's what it is. But no, I just hand out cold turkey. So I do.
He does?
Yeah. Yeah, as I get older, the sympathy, even more in kids. I'll tell you a story to finish off with, right? And I'll probably get abused for it on Twitter. So my son was playing football within the school grounds in the 4G on a bank holiday, Easter Friday. So there was no janitors, nobody to open the gates. So they all, as they do, they climb over these 15, 16, 20 foot fences that surround these AstroTurf pitches, and I got a phone call and they said, I've really, really hurt my knee. I'm really struggling. And they said, but the janitor will be here at 6 o'clock to open up. And I said, I've got news for you. There's no janitors coming. It's a bank holiday. He says, you need to come down. And I was like, oh God, right, okay, I'll come down. So I came down and he was really struggling to walk. He says, I can't go over the fence. And I said, well, there's no janitor coming. I said, you have no other option. You'll need to climb that fence. So I get two of his mates to basically drag him up one side and I dragged him down the other side. And by the time we took him to accident emergency, he had a broken knee and they had said he probably dislocated it in the tackle, and then when he hit the ground, it popped back in. And we're now waiting on the MRI scan for ligament damage. So, yeah, I made him climb over that fence, which I feel quite bad about, but there was no other way. There was no sympathy. I was just like, get effing over it. I've not got time for this. Hurry up. And Paula phoned me for the hospital and told me what was going on. I felt quite sheepish.
Okay, so Kenny, I think we all know that leaving your son in Scotland outdoors all night long was not an option. So
the Tigers would have got him.
I think you've done the right. I can join in that story, actually, and I'll keep it very short. Many years ago, my son, who is now in his 20s, kept moaning. Well, he hurt his wrist. And I was giving this, you know, man up, shut up, stop it. And his mum was, oh, we should do something about it. And I was very much, 3 days later, I'm still hearing it. I'm like, no, he's just knocked it. Stop it. Don't pander to him. He needs to man up. Anyways, lo and behold, she takes him to A&E and he's broken his wrist. So, yeah, been there, done that.
Yeah, bizarrely enough, my other son as well, the only broken bone I had in my whole, because obviously I've done boys football for the last 15 years, and the only broken bone I had in my whole career was my other son. And, I made him play the second half with two breaks in his arm. Yeah. There was a clean break, and then they call it a green, it's like a green twig break where it doesn't snap, it just kind of splinters. So yeah, I wasn't flavour of the month for that one either. But you know, sometimes, especially when you're playing football, you're just caught up in the moment, and you're like, just it's fine, just get on with it. And kids are that resilient; they just get on with it, and they don't really moan about it until the adrenaline stopped going because they're playing football. And once everything calms down and the heart rate goes down, then the pain starts to kick in. Yeah. That's when they realise they've really done something. So. Yeah, I'm not a good judge of injuries at all. I just tell people to go on with it. It's probably because I've had so many in my life as well. So many things go wrong with my legs and my hips and Achilles tendon damage and all sorts. And I was just given cold turkey as well. I just got on with it. So I think it's just been passed down from my dad to me, and now I'm passing it down to the boys. But, you know, such is life. If you wrap them up in cotton wool and you know, bubble wrap, then it doesn't set them up well in life. But they always remind me about it. You know, my oldest boy, it's obviously in the Navy now, he always reminds me, you made me play with a broken arm, you old bugger. And I said, I don't care. We still didn't win. So
yeah, that's about right. He broke, and you can still remember the scoreline. Yeah, that's impressive. But no, Kenny, I'm with you, Ed, as well there, mate. Yeah, I don't have a lot of sympathy, and I do get them to push on. But when I used to come on the pitch, and I'd be limping from the week before, and I still don't know what I've done. It's just kind of how it was. And there are many times now what things I did that I would probably, my kids would probably end up in A&E, not via me, but they would end up in A&E to get it looked at. The stuff that I wouldn't even contemplate in a day. It's different generations.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, guys, listen, we've gone way, way, way off track.
This is where this conversation is going,
isn't it? But do you want to bring it back down to earth for the last few minutes, Darren? Any final thoughts?
Oh, I think we've probably covered Panther. It's been a great chat, and I guess if I was to put a message out there, it genuinely would be, you know, watch your space, watch what we're doing. We're underpinning this business. We have some great assets to go forward with. We have opportunity to go forward with that isn't always clear. And whilst the way that we're doing it isn't necessarily the standard way of, you know, raise as much cash, smash into a project. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, then you just recapitalize and find something else and go again. We're not doing that. We are underpinning what we're doing. I want our shareholders to be able to sleep at night as much as they can in exploration. We know it's a risk and reward game, but also we've got to manage that risk. And that's exactly what I'm doing, and that's exactly what I'll continue to do. And regarding capital, when we need capital, we can get it. But it'll only be done at the right time and on the right terms.
Mm-hmm. Just to finish off, Darren, one thing that's popped into my head: are Panther shareholders going to get an opportunity to take part in the seed funding round of the Australian listing?
No,
or will no, it'd just be the IPO stage. They can get involved.
The seed funding. It will stay in Australia, and there is good logic behind that.
Okay.
You know, it's there to make sure that we've got the right people. I learned a lot from the IPO last January. You've got to remember, by the way, this was done in the December, the raise. And that was a brutal market, nothing like it is today. And we definitely took the capital that we needed, and that was fantastic. But what I didn't do, and I've learned from that, was look after the aftermarket. Mm-hmm. And in the end, then we got hit by COVID, so it was kind of a double bubble, and it was not fantastic times, even though nothing had changed. And so I've learned from that. And no, we've got to make sure that the Australian subsidiary is looking after itself in the right territory at the right time. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's purely a commercial decision to benefit us all and make sure that we get the capital in that we need.
All right. Good. Nice way to finish off. All right, Dan, well, enjoy your weekend and be sure to have a few beers if it's going to be sunny. And I'm sure we'll be talking to you again soon.
Well, yes. Yeah, we will do. Cheers, guys. And I hope you're out tonight celebrating St. George's Day with us all, Kenny.
I've got the cross on my dartboard. I'm just going to throw some darts at it at the moment. I've got an hockey set up in the garage, so yeah.
On that note, guys.
Thank you, Darren.
Cheers, Mark. Cheers,
see you later. Cheers, bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Bye.
Thank you for listening to another podcast from Market Musings with Fairbairn and Russell. Tune in next time.